Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's Thursday, the 29th of September. A very good morning to you and welcome to Africa Link. I am Jane Ayeko Kumet in Bonn, Germany. In today's edition, Amnesty International finds credible evidence that government in Khartoum has been using chemical weapons against civilians in Darfur.
These wounds and these injuries were not the product of conventional weapons and were most likely due to a class of chemical weapons known as blister agents or vesicants.
In South Sudan, another rebel group once led by David Yaw Yaw says it wants to oust President Salva Kiir.
The SSDM or SSDA is announcing that it shall join the struggle against the authoritarian tribalistic regime in Juba.
Plus, another exciting episode of Crime Fighters coming up shortly.
Top story.
The rights group Amnesty International says it has credible evidence that the Sudanese government has been using chemical weapons against civilians in one of the more remote regions of Darfur over the last 8 months. Amnesty International estimates that at least 30 possible chemical attacks have taken place in the Jabal Mara area of Darfur since January and that more than 200 people have been killed. Jonathan Loeb is a crisis response advisor with Amnesty International. My colleague Mark Caldwell spoke to him about their finding and started by asking him how they were able to ascertain that chemical weapons in particular had been used in these attacks.
Amnesty International was able to gather a great deal of testimonial and photographic evidence by doing phone interviews with over 50 survivors of these alleged chemical attacks who provided descriptions of the signs and symptoms that developed in people after they were exposed to the suspected chemical weapons. Several of them were able to then send photographs of the victims to Amnesty after these interviews. We were then able to share the interview notes and the photographic evidence with two independent chemical weapons experts based in the United States, who both independently came to the conclusion that these wounds and these injuries were not the product of conventional weapons and were most likely due to a class of chemical weapons known as blister agents or vesicants. However, without access to the area and without the ability to do soil samples and urine and blood samples, it is impossible to know definitively exactly which type of chemicals were used in these attacks.
Are these weapons not banned under international treaties?
Yes, chemical weapons have been banned under several treaties, including the Chemical Weapons Convention, to which Sudan, along with 191 other countries, are signatories.
Where and how did Sudan obtain these weapons?
We're not able to determine exactly where or how Sudan obtained these weapons. This is one of the reasons why we are calling for an investigation, an on-site investigation led by the Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Weapons into the allegations of development and use of these weapons.
Apart from further investigations, what other action would Amnesty like to see taken in light of its investigations?
These suspected chemical weapons attacks took place in the context of a large government campaign, military campaign in an area called Jabal Mara. During this campaign, we also documented a wide variety of other violations of international law, including unlawful killings, forced displacement, sexual violence. And Amnesty is calling, in addition to the investigation, we are calling for the government of Sudan to permit humanitarian actors access to this area, as they are currently prohibited from entering. And we are also calling on the UN Security Council to pressure the government to allow the UN peacekeeping mission that is in Darfur access to this area and the ability to build a base in this area so that they can provide protection for the civilians who are still living there.
Jonathan Loeb, Crisis Response Advisor with Amnesty International. And from Sudan to South Sudan, where a rebel group known as the South Sudan Democratic Movement has vowed to use force to topple the government of President Salva Kiir. Led by Lieutenant General Khalid Boutros Bora, the group claims to have an armed force numbering some 16,000 troops. Salva Kiir's government is already facing a rebellion by former Vice President Riek Machar. Our East African correspondent, James Shimanyula, has been speaking speaking to Mark Caldwell about what is known about the rebel group.
The South Sudan Democratic Movement and its military wing known by its name of COBRA is a movement that was once led by a senior military man. He was a general in the South Sudan government army, and then he quit the army, went to establish a powerful force in Jonglei, which is the largest state in South Sudan, that is northeast of the capital Juba. He's called David Yao Yao. President Salva Kiir persuaded Yao Yao to lay down his arms after extensive damage in Jonglei. He rejoined the army, and then he accommodated him in his government, and as one of the senior military men and a politician as well. So after that, the movement had no leader. What has happened is just a rebirth of the movement and a new leadership.
The group says it is opposed to President Salva Kiir. Does that necessarily mean it is prepared to fight alongside the forces of Riek Machar, who is Kiir's opponent?
There is a possibility that the group may fight not only with Riek Machar, but other smaller rebel forces. All that the spokesperson for the group, Kenoi Philip Kadal, says is that, in fact, he's hinting at the fact that there may be a merger, as you can hear him speak when he addressed journalists.
The SSDM, or SSDA, is announcing that it shall join the struggle against the authoritarian tribalistic regime in Juba, being conscious of the need to unify the ranks of all the forces opposed to the regime. SSDM / COBRA shall immediately enter serious dialogue with the like-minded patriotic forces.
Kenoi Philip Kadal, spokesperson for the South Sudan Democratic Movement, winding up that talk between James Shimanyula and Mark Caldwell.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
In just a few days' time, travel between Ethiopia and its tiny neighbor Djibouti is expected to become easier when a new railway linking the two countries' capitals goes into operation. Crucially, the new link will give landlocked Ethiopia better access to Djibouti's seaport, which is located near some of the world's busiest shipping lanes. Koleta Wanjohi reports from Addis Ababa.
The railway stretching 600 kilometers from Addis Ababa to the port city of Djibouti will transport both cargo and passengers. The project cost $3.7 billion, of which 70% was funded by China and the rest by the Ethiopian government. It is set to slash the current journey time between the capitals. Traveling from Addis Ababa to Djibouti by road takes 3 days, but by rail it will be between 10 to 12 hours. Project manager Makonnen Getachew says passenger services will travel even faster than goods trains.
The passenger train has a capacity to travel 120 km per hour, and it's already the design speed. And the freight train has a capacity of 90 km per hour. But for the first time, it may travel by 70, 80 km, not the maximum design capacities.
The train will carry up to 2,800 passengers per trip, and it will make 2 trips per day. But the railway will be more heavily used by cargo trains. Landlocked Ethiopia relies on the Djibouti port for 90% of its imports and exports. The new railway will be used to transport goods ranging from vehicles and machinery to clothes, leather products and grains. The head of communication at the Ethiopia Railway Corporation, Dereje Tefera, explains the economic benefits of the new railway line.
So it's linked from Ethiopia to Djibouti and other neighboring countries. It's a part of a Trans-Africa railway network. So it will give an opportunity for connecting Ethiopia with another neighboring countries, and it will minimize the cost of the transport and the transport time, and it's free from pollution. It uses the renewable energies and so on.
Ethiopia has dedicated one of its major hydropower plants to supplying the service with electricity in order to avoid power cuts. After 3 years of building work, the railway should be in action in less than a week's time.
Koleta Wanjohi reporting from Addis Ababa. Now moving even further south, German Environment Minister Barbara Hendricks is in Kenya, where she's hoping for support for Germany's tough stance on wildlife protection and the ban on the ivory trade. Her visit comes as the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, known as CITES, meets in Johannesburg, South Africa. Jed Nyingi reports.
Environment Minister Barbara Hendricks says Germany is committed to protecting endangered wildlife species. Both Germany and Kenya are opposed to any lifting of the ban on ivory trade, as favored by Swaziland, Zimbabwe, Namibia, and South Africa. Edna Moloa, South Africa's environment minister, says some Southern African countries have more elephants than their habitat can sustainably support.
But it's about managing these populations of ours in a manner that will actually bring sustainability to vegetation, but also getting the needed funding for paying for the conservation functions.
African elephants are among hot topics being discussed at the Convention on International Trade in Endangered Species, the CITES conference in Johannesburg. The International Union for Conservation of Nature recently reported an unprecedented 30% decline in elephant population from 2007 to 2014. Only South Africa, Namibia, and Botswana have increased in elephant heads. These countries, along with Zimbabwe, are allowed to trade ivory, but with some restrictions. However, a coalition of 13 African countries wants a total ban on sale of all African elephant ivory. Sabri Zain, director of policy for the Wildlife Monitor Group Traffic, says proposals from both sides will be a distraction from the real issues.
The real focus of this meeting should be on what needs to happen on the ground to help improve anti-poaching efforts, to help improve anti-trafficking efforts, to help reduce demand for ivory in the consumer countries. I think if all the countries in this conference of the parties place all their focus and energy on addressing those huge issues, I think we'll accomplish more for the conservation of elephants than just debating on whether it should be on one list or another.
The illegal trade of wildlife is the world's fourth largest illegal international trade after narcotics, counterfeiting and human trafficking. CITES Secretary General John Scanlan says the trade is being carried out by organized criminal groups who are well armed and in some cases equipped with machine guns and helicopters, which they spot and kill their prey.
So we've seen a surge in the illegal trade of wildlife, both plants and animals, over the past decade or so, and it's spiked a few years back, not yet under control by any stretch of the imagination. But it's estimated, and this is just an estimate, to be worth in the order of $20 billion per year. But we shouldn't think of it just in monetary terms. We also have to think of it in terms of the impact on the wildlife.
Jen Nyingi reporting. Up next is Crime Fighters. Stay tuned.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and a warm welcome to another exciting Crime Fighters series from DW. The title of this drama is Click on the Link, and it was written by Wanjiko Mwaura. Our story takes place in the vibrant African city of Mawatu. The pace of life in Mawatu has been changed by technology, with more young people using their phones to access the internet and enjoy social media platforms. The students at Hakiri College are shocked when they learn on social media that one of their classmates, Zawadi, has been found lying on the roadside, severely wounded. The young woman is now in a coma. Speculation is going viral in this first episode entitled, Did He Do It? We're about to meet Kendi, Zawadi's best friend, and Matu, Zawadi's boyfriend, who are visiting her in hospital.
Matu, I can't believe anyone would stab Zawadi. Of all people. She's the sweetest person I know. The best friend I've ever had.
I can't believe it either. Whoever did it didn't even take anything from her. The police found her bag, and her phone and wallet were still in it.
Maybe she was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. Or maybe...
If we hadn't fought, Zawadi wouldn't be lying here.
What are you talking about, Matu?
Kendi, We had a huge fight after we left class yesterday.
Why?
I accused Zawadi of cheating on me with a stranger she'd met online. A guy she'd never even met in real life.
That guy, Zake Makele? Zawadi mentioned him to me.
Yes, him. He'd been showing a lot of interest in Zawadi, and I told her to stop encouraging him. She told me I should stop interfering in her business.
Matthew, try not to focus on it. Don't beat yourself up about it.
You don't understand. This was the worst fight we've ever had. She threw a book at me and stormed off. I ran after her, but she wouldn't talk to me. So I let her go.
But you didn't stab Zawadi, did you?
Candy, of course not. How can you even say that?
To show you that you need to stop blaming yourself.
But I feel like it's my fault. I should have been there to protect her. Do you think someone could have wanted her dead?
Like who? I can't think of anyone. We hang out together all the time. And she's never mentioned anything strange. Did she ever say anything to you?
No, never. She wasn't even concerned when that online guy said he'd do anything just to meet up with her. She said she did plan to meet him because he seemed more interested in her than I was.
That's not like her at all. So, did she meet him?
No. She said she'd only told me that to make me jealous. I wish she hadn't. We wouldn't have fought, and we would have walked home together like we always did.
Has Zawadi told Zaki that she wanted to meet him?
I don't know. Wait, do you think this guy may have had something to do with the stabbing?
It's possible. Haven't you heard of people who stalk others online and hurt them? You know what? Maybe I could ask Tembo what he thinks about all this. Remember him, the IT guy from the police we hang out with sometimes?
Oh, yeah.
I really hope Zawadi wakes up soon. Maybe she'll remember who did this to her.
Visiting time is over now.
May we stay a little longer?
Sorry, it's not allowed.
Come on, Matu. We have to get back for afternoon classes.
Excuse me. Hello? Excuse me, guys. Can you be quiet, please? Our lecturer, Mr. Miwani, has requested that we wait a few minutes. He's just coming back and he's got some guests.
Matu, after such a day, staying even longer.
I'd rather have stayed with Zawadi.
You need to keep yourself busy. The doctors are taking good care of her. Don't worry.
Thank you for waiting, everyone. These are Officers Fred Obi and Sally Bessel. As you might already have heard, one of your fellow classmates, Zawadi, is in hospital after being stabbed last night. The police are here because they would like anyone with any information to come forward, as it may help them catch the culprit.
Excuse me, madam. What kind of information are you looking for?
We're looking for anyone who might have seen Zawadi yesterday evening, or someone who might have known where she was going.
Yes. Who are her close friends or neighbors? Don't be afraid to come forward. Please, take this opportunity to talk to the officers and tell them anything you may know. Class dismissed.
Hey, Matu, don't you think you should go and tell them about the fight you had with Zawadi yesterday after class? So many people saw you. Someone's sure to tell them if you don't.
What's your problem? Mind your own business, Kilele.
I'm just saying, bro. This could look really bad for you.
Thanks for your concern, but I have nothing to worry about. Let's go, Candy.
Hey, is there a problem here?
No, Officer Obi. We were just leaving. Isn't that right, Candy?
Actually, I wanted to talk to the police. Go ahead, Matu. I'll see you tomorrow.
I want to talk to the police, too.
Okay, bye then.
Mr. and Mrs. Ketu, my name is Inspector Mundo. I'm heading the investigation into your daughter's case. I'm very sorry about what happened to her, and I assure you we are doing everything we can to get the person who did this.
What happened to her?
The lady who took her to hospital said she found Zawadi unconscious by the roadside this morning as she was driving to work.
No.
From preliminary reports, we know that your daughter was stabbed sometime during the night.
What can we do to help, Inspector?
Do you know anyone who might have wanted to harm your daughter?
No. She never complained about anyone.
But she always told us she was an adult now and she could take care of herself. We've only met one of her friends, Kadi.
Candy. We met her once before and again this morning at the hospital.
So no boyfriend that you know of?
None that we've met. But she may well have had one. She never gave us any reason to worry, though. Her grades were always good. She's a good girl. Please, Inspector, find out who did this.
Mr. Ketu, we fully intend to find them. Two officers assigned to this case, Fred Obi and Sally Besso, are investigating as we speak.
Why?
We need to get back to the hospital, sir. We need to be with our daughter when she wakes up.
Look, Candy, isn't that Officer Besso and Officer Obi?
Hey, Kilele, yeah. I wonder what they want today.
Hey, morning, Candy.
Morning, Matu.
Oh, why are the police back again?
No one seems to know. Let's wait and see. Uh-oh, Officer Fred's pointing at us.
Uh-huh, and they're coming this way.
You must be Matu.
I am. Why?
You are a suspect in the stabbing of Zawadi Ketu.
What?
We are taking you into custody for further investigations.
Why are you arresting him?
Matu, you need to come with us.
Candy, no, what's this? What's going on?
Come on, move.
No, let me go.
Hey.
I'm innocent.
Hey, let young me go. Man. Young man.
Come on.
Move.
With this, we come to the end of the first episode of Click on the Link. Does Matu really have something to do with his girlfriend's stabbing? We also heard something about Zake, the man she met online. Who is he? And what about Zawadi? Will she wake up? Find out in the next episode. As always, you can listen to this episode again by visiting our webpage, dw.com/crimefighters. Do connect with us by liking our Facebook page and let us know what you think of this series. Until next time, be well.
And now, before we leave you, here is a reminder of our main stories. The rights group Amnesty International says it has credible evidence that the Sudanese government has been using chemical weapons against civilians in one of the more remote regions of Darfur. A South Sudanese rebel group under the new leadership has vowed to use force to topple the government of President Salva Kiir. And we've also been hearing about a new railway line linking Ethiopia and Djibouti. Please remember, we welcome your comments on our program. You can send us an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or an SMS to country code 49160-957-59510 or a letter to AfricaLink DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. And for more news, do not hesitate to visit our website dw.com/Africa. From me, Jane Ayeka-Kumet, life is beautiful, so look at it from a positive side. Goodbye.